group. And Sally, you want to start?
Oh, hi, I'm Sally. I met you in the hall. I'm the staff for the Trustee Cannon Advisory Council.
Thank you.
John Dorn from Mankato.
Sure, just when I have a mouthful of cookies.
Janet Lexon from Lake.
Ann Peckman, St. Paul.
Earl Rasmussen from Blaine.
Zainab Hassan, New Brighton.
Sonia Juanado from Moorhead.
Marilyn Cathcart from Minneapolis.
Nancy Black, Minneapolis.
Carl Kermans from Champlin.
So it's your turn for an opening statement.
Okay, very good. Thank you. As you know, I'm Bill Batten, and I'm a resident of Woodbury, Minnesota. And I'd like to think of myself, though, as a citizen of the state. I'd like to answer the question, why am I here? Why am I applying for this position? And it's really two reasons, one of which is I've been very involved in the growth of education within the state, and I have a strong commitment to continuing to make Minnesota a strong place to live and work. I probably got the commitment to education at an early age. My mother was a first grade teacher in the days when you had a 2-year certificate, and she had four kids, got married, had four kids, did some teaching, and then decided she had to go back to school to get her degree. She drove 45 miles each way in the middle of South Dakota to finish her degree and go back until she ended up retiring as a teacher in South Dakota. I'm also married to an ECFE teacher here in St. Paul, so I sort of have to pay attention to education a little bit. I attribute who I am and what I am to the path I took along the way with regard to education. I got 2 degrees, physics and electrical engineering, so I'm a little bit of a nerd, I guess. I'm trained as a scientist and an engineer. But then I also got a degree the hard way, working, supporting a family, and getting a degree over a course of 7 years by going to school and during the day and at night and that sort of thing as well. So I've experienced what it means to do continuing education after I've been out as well. While I've been working, I've worked for some of the state's largest companies, Honeywell and 3M, experienced what it is to be at the big ones. I've worked for a couple of small companies, including one that chose to move out of the state of Minnesota and move to Colorado instead of remaining here. So I've lived through kind of those trade-offs as well. I'm currently vice president of engineering for a biomedical firm over in Plymouth, a company called Nonin Medical, which is a privately held firm, started 26 years ago in somebody's garage. And it's grown to be approximately $50 million company in that amount of time, so I understand the issues associated with that. Finally, in addition to the business background and my science background, I've had a strong commitment to public service. I live in Woodbury, have for the past 22 years, and during most of that time I've been involved in the Planning Commission, the City Council, spent 12 years in their Economic Development Authority looking at how we were going to attract business and build the community. Retail is easy. Attracting businesses and jobs is a lot harder, particularly on the east side. And I've served them well. And in the sense of higher education, I've been a Mankato State, Minnesota State Mankato, for the last 25 years. I served on their industry advisory board, helping to lend my experience to growing the programs down there. I also have worked at St. Thomas on their industry advisory board, including helping to start their electrical engineering program about 6 years ago. So I have a very strong commitment to the city, to the state. I'm very interested in this position, and I'd like to lend my skill set to help grow education in the state of Minnesota. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Key early activity in this the life of a new trustee, within the first year, there will be a leadership transition as our chancellor retires at the end of June 2011. You had any experience in leadership transitions, either from the management side or from a board side? And what principles that you found that lead to successful transitions?
Well, I participated in interviewing of deans at both Mankato State and at St. Thomas. And so as deans of transition, I've been associated with Mankato long enough that I think I've been through 3 deans during that course there and have been asked to participate in, talk to them, and help do that. In the business side, we've just gone through a transition in my company where our CEO has gone and our owner has stepped into the role. So I've been participant in and survived management transitions in both cases. One of the things I look for in helping to pick someone and identify someone is two qualities I hold dear, respect and trust. I learned a long time ago that you can't be liked by everyone, but it is very important to be respected, and that's one of the things that I look for in someone. I know I like to follow people that I can respect and trust and who have a vision and a clarity of that vision. So as we would undergo a transition from the chancellor's office, I'd be looking for someone who could fill that shoes, had a picture of where they'd want to go, and the ability to pull it off.
Great. Other questions? Carl?
What would you think would be the most important characteristic for a new chancellor coming into Minsky at this time?
The Minsky system is such a diverse and interesting system. I think just getting your arms around all of the pieces that have been pulled together is probably the first step. Understanding how the community colleges fit with the traditional universities and how all that's blended together, because that's kind of unusual. I remember when that transition happened. And so I think one of the most important things is to figure out how the diversity of opportunities within the system all fit together and how I can marshal those forces to help meet the mission of the system, you know, to help educate people, prepare them not only for their first job, but prepare them for their third, fourth, and fifth jobs later on as well.
Thank you. Yes, Yvonne?
Using your background and skills from a diverse point of view, education, the business world, the scientific world, what would you like to see your role be on the Minsky board?
Probably one of the things that I have a passion for, and actually that's probably one of the things that in reference to Kent's earlier question, I look for someone with passion, and as I look for that new chancellor, it'd be someone who has a passion to do something. My interest is in education has been very good to me, and my passion is to get the message out early and often. I have a 19-year-old son who started at Century. He has a learning disability. He didn't quite make it. He's back in school now, and I don't care what he does as long as he's doing something. I think it's incredibly important to instill at an early age a passion to find what you're good at and get the education necessary to make that happen. I think secondarily, then, it's important to continue that learning throughout life. So if I had two messages, find your passion early, get education for it, and continue growing and learning. If I had stopped after my college career and had done that, if I hadn't reinvented myself and continued to go to school, you know, I'd be a dinosaur in my industry, and so I've had to reinvent myself. And I think that's important for people. Start early and never stop.
Thank you.
Yes, Janet?
Considering all of the budget cuts and what is probably going to be some more budget cuts in higher education, where do you think we can reel in expenses, or where cuts should be made, or what would your solutions be to maintain the quality of the Minsky system amidst these various cuts? How do we plug in the holes in the dike?
Yeah, that's. I wish I had an immediate answer to that. I probably wouldn't be sitting here, but I think one of the keys is we can't cut the quality. And that's an easy thing to say. I think this is exactly the time, though, to invest. Having survived the past recession and the financial problems going on, we had choices to make as a company here, and we chose to invest and not to totally cut back. That's a difficult decision to make. I do think, given the diversity of opportunity that we have in this system, the diversity in the number of campuses, the diversity in the number of offerings and that sort of thing, a logical place is to start is to look at those offerings, understand what our constituency, the residents, the businesses in the state of Minnesota need and require, and understand if we're meeting that mission. I understand the drive to have a campus and or a program within 30 or 40 miles of every citizen in the state, and I think that's a laudable goal. On the other hand, I think we need to take a look as well at, are all the programs meeting the needs? Do we have to have the variety of programs that we do? And that's where I'd go. I'm not a big believer in cutting people. I know that's the place where people want to start, but quite honestly, my experience in the educational system here through the Minscu system and the people I meet, the most important people are the dedicated teachers, the people with the passion to instill that into the folks. So I'd probably start looking at the programs. I'd assess which ones are critical to where we're going, and I'd look at, is there some pruning that needs to be done in order to do that?
Nancy?
Hi. The system, unfortunately, has started that process, and there have been substantial cuts at the state universities, 30 programs at St. Cloud, 80 faculty at Mankato. You talked about investing and not cutting the quality. I don't exactly. How would you go about trying to do that?
Yeah, well, again, that's one of those easy questions to ask and a hard one to answer. I think one of the things that we've overlooked in doing this is getting industry and businesses to invest. And that's probably one of the things that as I've looked at it, there's probably one of the biggest gaps. I have a really firm belief that particularly in outstate Minnesota, the colleges, the campuses should be an engine for growth and should help them. I've seen that, and I was an undergraduate at the School of Mines out in Rapid City, South Dakota. They built an incubator and said business and school are going to work together. I don't think we've done enough throughout the state to really link the businesses into the campuses, both in terms of identifying what we need. I mean, In my 30-plus year career, I've been fortunate enough to be unemployed only a grand total of 7 months. But during that 7 months in this recent recession, it was interesting. Everyone wanted to rush to the latest new thing, biomedical or green fuel. And that's where everybody's headed in Minnesota. And a lot of the campuses looked at it, too. What can we do to be relevant? I think bridging that gap between what do we need in the state of Minnesota is very important to make sure that we're providing the right thing without cutting to the bone and cutting that quality. And I'm speaking probably from a business perspective because I run a group of about 40 or 50 people at this point in time. It's critical. I'm only as good as the people who work for me. If I don't have quality people coming out of the system and coming into it, I'm in trouble. My business is in trouble. And so I think probably making that link and trying to get business to understand that these cuts hurt everybody in the long run is, I think, critically important. Perhaps it's been tried, but I think we need to do more in that area as well.
Thank you. Marilyn?
Other than funding, which admittedly is a huge challenge.
Sure.
What are some of the other significant challenges you think Minscu faces?
Well, one of the keys, and I know it's made the press a little bit lately, but one of the issues over my time within the system working with Mankato and working with some of the others is obviously the issue of how can I start at one place and end up in another. You know, my son started at Century and had to drop out. He's back in school now. But that whole issue of how can I start somewhere, end up somewhere else, how can I continue that process? So transferability of credits and making sure that the programs fit together, I know is a critical challenge. I've heard it from the students. I've heard it from the instructors. And it is something that can really only be dealt with at a system level. You can't let a Mankato or St. Cloud or Bemidji do it all by themselves. If they define a program as one thing and it's not taking into account the other areas, you won't get that bridge. So outside of finance, I think that's one of the issues. I think the other one is meeting the challenge of the aging population and getting people to continue that learning and addressing the needs of the non-traditional students. Like I said, I spent 7 years getting a master's degree while trying to work, and I know how hard it can be to do that. I think it's vitally important that you continue to grow your workforce and get people to continue to learn. So I think that also is one of the challenges, is how do we adapt to that? How do we use the internet? How do we fend off the challenge of the internet, where you can get a class from anywhere in the world, potentially? So I'd see those as some of the other critical challenges.
Yeah. Sonia?
Okay. As you're well aware of, I know, hopefully you are, that the demographics of the state's changing and evolving. We're having more, not only immigrants, but people of color. And so Minsky has a commitment to diversity. Can I please get your definition of diversity, and what does it mean to you when we say that we would like to see that continue?
Okay. My definition of diversity, I don't necessarily judge it by color or race or creed. It's because I've met engineers and people from all over the world, and that isn't the challenge. You find an engineer from India thinks a lot like an engineer from the United States who thinks a lot like an engineer from Germany. We tend to be nerds no matter what. But I think it's important to have a breadth of experience and different capabilities, and that comes with diversity. So it's a broadness of outlooks, backgrounds, experiences, and all of that that gets brought together. I think it's vitally important we capture the imagination of kids at an early age, regardless of where and what they are, and find that teacher who can ignite that passion, whether it's in the arts or the social studies or the whatever, and get those people, get everyone engaged as early as possible. So, the world is more diverse. When I started college, a lot of my peers looked a lot like me. Now I have people from all over the world that I'm working with, I've worked for. I think it's important to bring that difference of viewpoint in. And I think even here in Minnesota, as the population changes, going to school with a 50-year-old as opposed to an 18-year-old, that's diversity in and of itself as well. And there are interesting challenges in learning styles and all of that. So I think it's important, and I think it is a big challenge, and I think we need to continue to reach out to people and pull them in.
Carl?
I'm just curious, with your company, with the company you work at, with the 40, 50 people, if there are any people that had gone to Minsky that are hired there, and if so, either that, but also, what would your company want Minsky to do to better prepare graduates for your company?
Okay. Great question, because I need to tell the story, because it indicates how far Minsky's come, in a sense. One part of my career, I worked for 3M, was a manager there and was hiring. I remember trying to hire one of the best students out of Mankato. At the time, it was Mankato State. She was the top engineering graduate in that class. I brought her in to 3M in probably early 90s and said, I want to hire this because I know the people. They've recommended her to me. And I got the answer of, you want to hire from Mankato? I mean, we could hire, let's go to the coast and hire and do something like that. So there's a definite bias against hiring at that time, particularly from a large corporation. Where I am right now, I have an EET student from Mankato who works for me. Over the course of years, I've had people from St. Cloud, Mankato, Bemidji, had a number of those folks work for me and with me and around me. What can we do? I'm back to it's one thing to prepare the folks, and I think you need to give them a good fundamental education. And the four-year programs at most of the states do a good job of instilling that. Get them ready. But if the professor's there, and one of the reasons I like the Minsky system, if I contrast it to the U of M, where I got my master's degree, is the people and the professors there tend to be, I'd say, more passionate about the kids, about what they do. They tend to have industry experience or experience from some other aspect of life. They need to pass that on because the degree gets you a start. But then what you do with it after that is a large part determined by who and what you are and the passion you bring to it and all of that. I do think we need to focus on job skill training. I continually explore programs in engineering, in drafting, in CAD, and that sort of thing. However, I don't ignore other programs to prepare people as well, because given our engineering-centric bias, which is where I spent most of my life, we're generally lousy writers. So communication skills, both verbally and written, are very important to me. And then flat-out leadership skills as well. Teaching people how to be part of a team, work together, very, very important. As an employer, we have 230 people, roughly, in our entire business, probably 200 of us in Plymouth. I'm looking for programs that can be brought in, maybe 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, target a specific area, and then deliver that training to my group right there. That works very well for me. I've had that done in some of the institutions before, because that lets me say, I need, you know, 20 people trained on medical device regulatory rules. Can you guys put a program together and bring it in? That works for me. So it's that kind of targeted training, I think, that in addition to getting them off on the right foot, you know, let's keep that going. And that's what I think MinSKU, in my experience, has done and can continue to do.
Deb?
Mainly, you talk about getting ready for, I mean, mainly not being ready for science and technology students. And on one hand, the students who graduate, I mean, we don't graduate enough students from high school to begin with. Mm-hmm. And those who graduate when they go to college, they are not ready to take science and math. So, and then they have to, some of them have to take remediation courses, which costs more. So how do you deal with that, I mean, mainly?
That's a good question, because I've been engaged in some of the STEM activities that have been going on through the MinSKU system, and I was part of the Visiting Wizards program at 3M for a while, getting kids interested. Again, you got to go back to it and hit them early. I think it is a shame when students come out, and I've asked the instructors at the universities, what do you think of AP classes? In other words, the advanced placement classes. And in general, most of them don't like it, because what happens is you'll get a cadre that comes out that might be very good, but the general level across the board isn't as good. And having 30% of the class come in and take remedial math, even those who want to be engineers, is a big problem. And I think we need to reach into the high schools and work on that. I think you've got to capture the kids at an early age and get them interested. I remember my math professor who got me enthused about numbers and fired up and excited. So I think we have to expose kids to it, show them that it can be fun. It doesn't have to be boring. With my son, even though he's not ever going to be an engineer, he had RC cars. He played with, tore them apart, destroyed them, things like that. I think we need to reach out, grab them early. I really do think we need to work with the high schools to really understand how we can take the product that's coming out of there and make it fit together more seamlessly. Because spending a lot of time retraining what the high school should do is a huge issue. And I came out of college and went to calculus, hit it, bounced, but managed to survive it and did that. My high school prepared me for that. And I didn't have any AP classes, but I was ready because I had some of the fundamentals. So sometimes perhaps we're getting a little too broad. Again, I come back to teach the fundamentals. I'm sort of a fundamentalist. I think kids should come out knowing how to read, write, do your fundamental math, do those sorts of things, because that's the basis for everything else. And then build on that. So... And as a scientist, you need math. You need science. But you need more than that, too. You really do. One more little story. I'll credit a teacher in high school. I was a freshman in high school, small town in South Dakota, 3,000 people, 400 kids in my whole high school. And this teacher came up to me and said, "Are you Bill Batten?" I said, "Yes." And he said, "Great. I'm Mr. Holm. I'll be your sophomore and senior English teacher." Okay. And then he said, "I'm also the debate coach." I said, "Okay." And he said, "You're going to go out for debate." And I said, "Oh, no. I'm into sports. We don't debate." He said, "No, you don't understand. You're going to have me for senior English and for sophomore and senior English. You will come out." And while at the time I didn't think much of it, I give him credit for taking me, this science guy who wanted to be the world's greatest physicist, and broadening my exposure to the arts, to debate, to declam, to acting, to all those sorts of things. That's a wonderfully broadening experience, and he ignited a passion in me. that's what we need to do as well. Sorry.
Oh, that's very good.
Got a little story.
We give excuses for soapboxes, so that's
okay.
Fine.
Great. All right.
Great. Other questions?
Must be getting late
in
the day.
What should we have asked you that we didn't ask you?
I think it was in the write-up and in the essay questions. And I think it is important to understand how to make decisions because it's one of the things. I talked about respect and trust and taking in a diversity of opinion and doing that. I've been a part of companies that are aerospace and defense, which trains you to think one way. I've been part of 3M, which I love dearly, but it has its flaws as well, and one of them was consensus. Everybody had to come to consensus, which was its own code word for the politics happens behind your back when you don't see it. And that's not a knock on them as a company, because I love the company. I think it's important to identify the issue you're trying to solve. I think it's very important then to get everybody to get their opinions out on the table. Talk about it. And it may go back to that debate training. I learned how to argue both sides of an argument, and I will do that sometimes to get that out on the table. I think it's important to discuss it and then decide, knowing that you can't get everybody exactly on board, but then you discuss, you tell people why you made the decision you did. Not so that you're getting second-guessed all the time, but because I found that over the years that people generally will follow much better if they understand the why. And so discuss it, decide, tell everybody why you did it, and then check up on it because, goodness knows, you never make exactly that decision and stay the course. So we didn't ask about how I operate in a large group setting and how I get to decisions, but I would assume that's a very important part of this process. And whether it's in business, I've had people come to me and say, if those guys just reported to me, they'd do what I told them. They'd have to do that. I've been a program manager in certain of my occupations. That means I have all of the responsibility and none of the authority. Everybody's dotted line. I have to make it go, but they don't do it because I'm the boss. They do it because I work with them and get them to build that team. I like that. That's what I get my energy from. I don't design stuff anymore. I'm a system engineer of people and processes and things. And so that team dynamics and working to solve stuff, that's what I still like to do, but it's a different kind of engineering.
Thank you.
That's one of the questions. There's probably a lot more.
What experience, your experiences in a bureaucracy like 3M?
Yeah.
How do you, what
your
would you
word,
take
not
from
mine.
That?
Yeah.
No. Certainly wouldn't want to apply that to the private sector.
That's right.
Never have a bureaucracy.
That's right.
How do you see that helping you with a bureaucracy called MinSkew?
Well, as I said, I learned to play politics in a lot of different ways. In aerospace and defense industry, it's kind of out in your face, and everybody's like that. At 3M, it's very Minnesota nice and very conciliatory. I remember back to the early days of the Minnesota High Tech Council, I think it was then. I used to serve on, and in fact, I just was chatting with Kate Rubin today, the president of MHTA. She called me to talk about some things, and we were chatting. I used to serve on the state university subcommittee that was on that, and it was Bob Vanasek, Sarah Janasek, myself, a number of folks, and that was my first real exposure to the politics and the discussion and the bureaucracy and the things that happen in what ultimately became the MinSkew system. I hate politics.
I do too.
I hate politics. I really do. I'm pretty much what you see is what you get. I enjoyed my time on the city council in Woodbury, and there may come a time when I'd want to do it again. I liked serving. I hated running for office. And so the bureaucracy within the system, and I deal with this. My wife's a school teacher in St. Paul. She loves teaching. She hates bureaucracy. We have a comment all the time about why can't they just let us teach? Why do we have to have all this other stuff with it? And I said, honey, that's why you're a great teacher. Don't ever leave it. I think I'm prepared to deal with some of the bureaucracy. I've seen it in big companies. I've seen it in politics. I've seen it in a number of other areas. I do understand the issues associated with having teacher contracts and with having unions and with having the issues that you have to deal with. But people are people, and I do think, again, laying out the issues and dealing with those different constituencies is very important. I have a passion for the state. I've had two companies that wanted me to move. I've had multiple offers to move out. This is my home. My wife lived in St. Paul in the Highland Park area when we met. She moved here independently. She lived in Europe. She lived in Indianapolis, Chicago. She lived all over the world. She moved to St. Paul, and she said, you know what? This feels like home. She's from Iowa. I'm from South Dakota. Minnesota's probably a nice compromise. But I have a passion for this state and for wanting to make it a better place and for dealing with that. Trying to get the universities coupled to businesses, I think, is incredibly important, and we need to cut through that bureaucracy and do that. I met a small manufacturer out of Belle Plaine, $1 to $2 million company. They needed help. They needed he was talking to me about, can you help me figure out how to redesign my system? They make athletic equipment. And I said, I can do that. But I put them in touch with Mankato, and Mankato took their entire senior engineering program, their project, and worked with this small company. And I kept consulting and advising. I think we need a lot more of that. I think we need to cut through and get to that. Why are these institutions important to those towns and to the industries? And that, to me, is probably one of the most fun things I've ever done, is arrange that marriage of industry and the school and put them together. And it worked to both of their benefits. And 24 students in that senior class had an experience that they'd never received any other way. And they sat there and said, boy, I figured out that I had to talk to these people over there in order to figure out how to do that. And that is a wonderful learning lesson when you're a kid in college, and to learn that lesson there instead of the first 3 or 4 years on the job. So,
any other questions?
I want to ask you, how would you promote STEM in the system, because it's going at a very small pace.
Yep. Well, I think I have three stickers that Don, I'm trying to remember his last name, has put together. There's a lot of STEM stickers that have gone on. I have a Barney sticker I think they created and all of that. I think we need to really get into the schools. I like the Visiting Wizards program from 3M. I think it's important to have people who have a passion for what they do to get into the schools and talk to the kids about what science is and you know. I got roped into, I got drafted into St. Thomas because I was giving a keynote speech at the meeting of the guidance counselors, the state university system. I think once a year, once every couple of years, the guidance counselors and the state university system would get together and talk about things. I was asked to talk about engineering. And one of the and I had a bunch of guidance counselors afterwards come up to me and said, I never realized that you could do that or it'd be that fun or you could do this. Now, hitting guidance counselors and juniors and seniors in high school, way too late. Go back and fire up that enthusiasm in junior high and grade school and that sort of stuff. And that's where you have to go do it. And I think you need to get people who are experienced at it out there to talk about it, because many of the instructors, many of the teachers haven't lived it. You know, they haven't lived. That's what I like about the Minsky system. Professors that I know, many of them have worked in industry. They have that experience. They can relate. So I think it's important to get people back there who can talk about that. We're facing a critical shortage in the state of Minnesota. And it's not just about science and engineering, but it's layout people. It's mechanical designers. It's technically competent people to do anything. So, anyway.
We tell most candidates that, or we tell all candidates who want to hear, that it's roughly a 40-hour-a-month job. That includes a couple of days of meetings, some ceremonial visits. You really want to get out among the various campuses spread throughout the state. A lot of reading to be well-prepared. You need a lot of material. How does that fit into your current full-time position?
It fits well. I mean, I have enough flexibility in my schedule to be able to do that. My commitments on the city front, for example, some of my other volunteer stuff have kind of toned down. We folded the EDA into the city council last year, so I'm only on the audit and investment committee now, which meets once a quarter. So my outside activities have kind of died down. I do have the flexibility in my position to be able to spend the time and energy. Again, I think a large part of it is finding the time if you have the interest and excitement to go and do it. So I don't see a big conflict there. There may come an occasional time where I might have to miss a meeting if I'm on a business trip out of the country. But generally, I've been able to schedule around those sorts of things. So I do think it's important. I'm happy with the fact that I'm working hard. I put passion into that. I think it's important to bring the work side in and the industry side in as well. So I'll make the time for the job.
It's your turn for some final comments.
Okay. Looks like we got back on schedule. That's a good thing. So anyway.
Well, you, for an engineer, you speak very crisply. Oh, very nice.
It's that debate training.
The debate training.
Like I said, it probably I give that gentleman more credit for what has happened to me than all the other stuff that I actually did, because I'm actually an engineer and a scientist who doesn't get all tongue-tied. And of course, you've all heard the joke, but I'll have to do it anyway. An extroverted physicist is someone who looks at your shoes instead of his own when he talks to you. So.
At least you're well-rounded.
I'll just reiterate a couple things. I have a passion for this. I have really enjoyed the time I've spent in getting involved in the education. I have a passion for the state of Minnesota. I firmly believe we haven't done enough to get industry and education together, and I think that needs to happen as well. I also think that in my years on the Economic Development Authority for the City of Woodbury gave me an appreciation of how hard it is to attract companies and to grow businesses. And it's kind of that dose of reality when you work for a Honeywell or a 3M that have been around for 75 or 100 or 125 years. You sort of forget the idea of how those things start. Working now for a company that started in somebody's garage, dealing with the issues with that, looking at the workforce problems that I have, how do I attract good people, I think, a big challenge. And it's something that gets me enthused and excited. And I want – the state's been good to me. I want to give back to that as well. I view this as an excellent opportunity to continue that next step and help make that happen. So.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Very good. Thank you.